Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, June 18th, 2024. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the two words that say start here in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 19 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you choose to do that before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process. And it contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do all of that soon and often, primarily because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives the more they actively apply these tools in their lives. And secondarily, because it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, please do so. Give us a call at 563-999-3581 and press 1 on your phone. Or if you're not listening live or you choose not to call in live, you can send us an email. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. Or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And if we get a comment or a question from you through email, we'll address it on the internet show. And then as time allows, send you a notification about what day and time that occurred so you can listen back to the archive for the feedback or input. And we greatly appreciate whenever anybody does that because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. The intention we have with this work is to be of service, and that's just a whole heck of a lot easier to do when we know how these things are landing for you. Also on that page, if you go to whyagain.org and click on the link that says start here, it'll take you to a page where You can download the actual worksheet process itself, and you can also listen to a whole list of shows that have been curated out of the last 13 years of this internet show. And some of them have actual audio of people being stepped through the worksheet process. And if you choose to listen to those, they can provide a tutorial for you to get maximum benefit from these tools in the shortest amount of time possible. And access to a number of those is available on the MindShiftersAcademy.org webpage. There's a Best of Audio Files page, and there's an Audio Files page. And just another way we're trying to make these tools available, easily available for ready access for anybody who wants to actively work to make their life better. These are some of the best tools I've ever encountered for that, specifically because they're made available so readily and because you don't need advanced level training. You don't need somebody else. It is always good to have somebody support you and step through it, and yet we have a lot of people that use these tools all on their lonesome and get powerful results. So if there's any way we can support you in getting access to these tools and using them to make a positive difference in your life, please let us know. Today's a Tuesday, so there will be a support group, and that's another tool that we make available absolutely free to help people learn and gain in proficiency of applying these tools in their lives from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time, Tuesdays and Thursdays, almost every Tuesday and Thursday for the past 20 years for the Tuesday group and 11 years for the Thursday group. And all the information you would need to join us or pass that along to somebody else that might benefit is available on the MindShiftersAcademy.org website. And we would be grateful if you would use it yourself and join us or pass that information along to somebody you think would benefit from it. So how can we support you? What's on your mind in terms of ways we can benefit you today in our work, as we've been looking at the Way of Mastery and the Yeshua letters and reading them with commentary. I continue to be hopeful that this is of benefit and that you'll let us know specifically if you have comments or questions. I'm actually, I've gotten just a little bit of feedback from people since I started bringing in the Yeshua letters. And one of the comments is that it doesn't seem very practical. Well, the only reason this doesn't seem practical, in my humble opinion, is because we've been trained to think that what's practical is to lead with our conscious logical mind and to use that as our primary interface with life. Judge things, analyze them, choose sides, us against them, good versus evil, right versus wrong. And to reach these conclusions based on how we've been programmed to think and what our languages and what our culture has said is appropriate and not appropriate. And, you know, one of the ways that people expand their worlds is they travel. And if you've done a lot of traveling – you wake up to the fact that, you know what, the way you were trained to do things in your little life, in your little world, isn't the only way to do things. There are cultures, you know, on this planet where if you're eating with anything other than a well-designed set of utensils and you're using this one first for this specific purpose and then that fork for that purpose and then this knife for this purpose and a different knife for the different purpose, unless you're using specifically designed utensils in a programmed way, that you're barbaric. And yet, right on this planet today, in other cultures, people find it absolutely acceptable in high society to eat a whole variety of their foods just using their hands. And this is just one simple example of how what you're trained to believe is good or bad, right or wrong, appropriate or inappropriate, is just what's been trained into you. Like the Way of Mastery says, your intellect has been shoved full of trivialities. Just like garbage in a garbage can, what you've been taught by your culture that gives you not just permission but actual commands to judge other people as less than is just stuff that's been made up. And it doesn't have any more validity than anything else that's made up, like a children's fairy tale. Because outside of your culture, outside of the group of people that all buy into that story, it doesn't have any meaning other than what's been given to it by the people who've agreed on its meaning. So, our call-in number again, just to remind people, is 563-999-3581. And even if I seem to be on a roll or in the middle of a monologue or reading something from one of the various books that we read, we welcome people to call that number and press 1 on their phone. So here's from the Yeshua letters again, another letter that was dated December 17th, 1987. And Yeshua tells Mark David Hammer to, or John Mark Hammer to take his Bible and turn to Matthew chapter 7, verses 5 to 8. And he feels completely weirded out by this, as though somebody might be watching him. And so he takes the copy of the Bible off the shelf and when he opens to that specific chapter and verse, Matthew chapter 7, verse 5 through 8, he gets this familiar feeling, and he thumbs through it and finds out both the pages and every word of every phrase are printed in red. And he reads, quote, "Thou hypocrite, first cast out the beam out of thine own eye, and then thou shalt see clearly to cast out the mote of thy brother's eye. Give not that which is holy unto dogs, neither cast ye your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet and turn again to rend you. Ask, and it shall be given you. Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. For everyone that asketh receiveth, and he that seeketh findeth, and to him that knocketh it shall be opened." And he notes that every word and phrase are printed in red, And then he hears Yeshua's familiar voice say, "Now we begin." Mark, these four verses should be read together. They are of great importance to the awakening consciousness. Are you aware of what the beam is in this phrase? And Mark says that he contemplates that he sees a log or something quite solid stuck in someone's eye, blocking their view. But the image doesn't feel quite right. And then the image shifts and he sees a beam emitted from the eyes toward another figure. The beam is multicolored and it feels like I've grasped something. And he says to Yeshua, "It's seeing the other person." I'm stumbling for the words. And Yeshua replies, "It is judgment, Mark. It is judgment that must first be cast out, for it is your only imperfection. With it, with judgment, your behavior toward your brother will necessarily be an attempt to save him according to your egocentric views. However, only love, capital L love, can affect meaningful change. There cannot exist love where there is already judgment, for judgment is the denial of loving." Now, just to break into this, in the Way of Mastery, it says in a number of places that love allows all things, embraces all things, trusts all things, surrenders to all things, and thereby transcends all things. Judgment is the opposite of love. Judgment is the opposite of forgiveness. Forgiveness is the opposite of judgment. Forgiveness is the dismantling of all judgments and perceptions and putting oneself into direct relationship with the flow of life just as it is. So this letter from Yeshua in the Yeshua letters goes on and says, verse 6 is almost always seen through the eyes of judgment. Where it says dogs and swine, these things are pictured as having less worth. This is not so. They represent the unawakened consciousness. The unawakened consciousness tramples wisdom out of their innocence and ignorance. This rends you with all that they know. Egos use other egos. It's all that they know. It is never your responsibility to cast your wisdom before the sleeping, but to follow the keys of verses 7 and 8, give when it's asked, for without asking, wisdom has no place to be received. Before helping your brother, ask and it shall be given to you. In quotes, ask and it shall be given to you. What will be given to you? The exact steps to follow. Do not reason what you hear, for it is the voice of the Father given through your Holy Spirit that you are hearing. You, your ego, your conscious logical mind, cannot know what is required of your brother or your sister. Although your judgment will lead you to believe that you do. So how does this apply in your own life? Dwell upon that. Dwell upon these thoughts. That's the end of our communication today. So there's layers in this letter from Yeshua, including, don't go trying to teach what you think you've learned in your spiritual practice or from listening to Michael Rice, or don't go trying to spread that around to other people unless they've asked you to share with them. Why? Because if you can pour the greatest of wisdoms, out toward, onto, for, with someone. But if they're not asking you to share it with them, there's no empty space within them. There's no allowance within them. They can't be taught unless they ask to be taught. You can't be taught unless you ask to be shown. This is why Guy Finley says things like, whether you realize it or not, in order for you to learn anything, you must make yourself subordinate to that which might teach you. I've distilled it from a variety of sources over the years, and I come to saying it, you know, in order for you to learn anything, you have to be in the place where you're making these two fundamental observations. The first active observation is, I don't know everything. It doesn't matter how many doctorates I get. It doesn't matter how many times I read The Course in Miracles or The Way of Mastery or The Impersonal Life by Joseph S. Benner, or it doesn't matter how many times I read however many books. I'll never know everything. So I can make this active, in the moment, direct, clear observation. I don't know everything. And so then the next observation that's available as an extension from that is, so whatever it is I think I know is either only partially true, since I don't know everything, and perhaps even completely false. And if I'm actively going into a situation with those two observations, open and active, now there's a potential for me to learn something new. It's not guaranteed, but the potential is there. And if I'm in the middle of a new situation and I'm actively asking to be shown based on those two observations that I don't know everything and therefore whatever it is I think I know is only partially true and perhaps even completely false, now I've opened the floodgates. Now I can learn because I'm asking to be shown. I'm creating a space within me that creates the opportunity for learning to occur. On the other hand, if I go into a situation focused on I know what I know, how I know it, where I learned it, and why it's right, I'm going to leave that situation knowing what I knew. There's no possibility for learning if I go in focused on all that I know. So to move back to lesson 21, where I left off reading it yesterday, the next section is titled Cultivating the Grace of Allowing. And the text reads, imagine that for the next 30 days, all that mattered was the cultivation of the grace of allowing. How would you do that? You might do that by coming down once again to the most concrete, the most mundane, the most ordinary experiences of any given day. And when you turn on your water in your shower in the morning, actually take time to be present, to feel its coolness change to heat, and to recognize that you've just observed the constant dance of change in your world, and simply say, I allow this change to occur. Now, yes, it makes it sound like you're some great being, when in fact the change is going to happen anyway. And yet, practice, play with it, have fun with it. If you burn your toast, take a deep breath. And before the egoic mind begins to complain and whine that this toast is not the way that the egoic mind wants it to be, just stop and look at it. Actually experience the burnt toast just as it is and say, I allow this toast to be burnt. And now I'm free. I'm free to choose to eat it as it is or begin anew. This, you know, my mind just clicked into Dr. Michael Rice's teachings, and he would have a whole lecture he would give on the idea of the benefit of moving away from right versus wrong thinking to moving into right versus not right for me. What's right for me versus what's not right for me. And it might just seem like a play of words and semantics, just like this little exercise says, now it makes it sound like you're some great being when you allow the water to change from cool to warm in the shower, and yet it's going to change anyway. It might seem like semantics, and yet there's a valuable change of pattern in thought away from judgment into allowing in both of these, in the Dr. Michael Rice lecture and talk, and in this exercise. I allow this toast to be burnt, and now I'm free to choose to eat it as it is or begin anew. I don't have to say, this is really bad that this burnt. I don't have to say, I'm such an idiot because I wasn't paying attention, or so-and-so is an idiot because they left the toaster on too high a setting before me. I don't need to go to judgment to be wide awake and aware. I can be observing, I can be in discernment, and I can leave the constriction and the contraction and the tightness and the tension that comes with judgment, I can leave it on the side. And I can practice an entirely new way of interacting with life from this, what they're calling cultivating the grace of allowing. And so the next paragraph here reads, if you get into your automobile and you pull out of your garage and the raindrops are hitting the windshield, simply give yourself permission to bring your mind back from the future into the present and say, I allow the falling of the rain. Close quotes. It's that simple. So you see, the power of transformation is the power of consciousness, which is the only thing that can be transformed. Learning is a consciousness thing. It is the only thing that can be changed. In consciousness is the only place learning can occur. And all learning is designed to, quote, translate perception, close quotes, so that it becomes more and more and more and more like the actuality of life itself, like capital R reality itself. Fear dissolves from the mind, and then the Creator can take the final step for you. Learning is necessary in the field of perception. You have placed yourself within that field of perception. So why not get on with it? And why not let your perception be healed? It is healed by bringing the power of observation to what is right in front of you. Not right in front of the body, but right in the field of awareness itself. That is why you should be dancing in your shoes at all times. They offer this quote, my goodness, I don't have to go anywhere. It's right here in front of me. This ordinary moment provides the doorway to the transformation of consciousness itself. All I have to do is bring a little willingness to it. And guess what? I have all the power under heaven and earth to do just that. Nobody can take that away from me. Nobody can change the freedom in which I live. I am the one who can bring that little willingness to this moment and let the raindrops hit the window. Close quotes. You you have placed yourself within the field of perception. Bringing the power of observation to what is right in front of you. Observation and allowance. Observation again, and observation in the next moment. No judgment, no labeling, being in the moment, allowing the truth of the moment to act on you. Putting the conscious logical mind and all the history of judgments and evaluations and the competitions, putting it to the side and allowing direct contact between your conscious awareness and the flow of life itself. Wide open, soft, breath moving. The text goes on and says, if you will look around yourself, you will discover in any given day plenty of things to keep you occupied. Plenty of reasons why boredom is nothing more than a decision. For right in front of you is the richness of a pathway, translated by the great comforter from a dream of separation to the royal highway to the kingdom. And all power under heaven and earth lies within you. In this moment, to choose again. And now it's time to take such statements as these out of the realm of abstract intellect into your very concrete lived moments. My goodness, I don't have to go anywhere. It's right here in front of me. This, quote, ordinary, close quote, moment provides the doorway to the transformation of consciousness itself. And all I have to do is bring a little willingness to it. And I have all power under heaven and earth to do just that. No one can take it away from me, and no one can change the freedom in which I live. I have the ability to bring a little willingness to this moment and allow it to be just what it is, and allow it to teach me about myself and about my brothers and sisters and what they need and what I need to bless creation in this moment. And it's time to take such statements out of the realm of abstract intellect into the very concrete lived moments of life. And say things like, quote, where can I choose again? Right now, where can I choose again? I can accept and allow these raindrops to hit the window. I can be present with them. I can hear them. I can watch them as they trickle down. Instead of being annoyed, instead of letting the mind go off into its future adventures, I can cultivate the art of being present right now as the very presence of a mind that is free. Close quotes. So here's the invitation. Consider in each of your next 30 days questions like, what could I utilize in this day to practice this exercise? Close quotes. And of course, you cannot be without things to practice with. It's impossible. Those that say they are bored are really saying, quote, I'm resisting the kingdom, pure and simple. Close quotes. Well, do we perceive once again that so many in your world seek to find a spirituality that will free them from the world of their experience, never even realizing that the very attitude of wanting to be freed of the world is the thing that chains them, imprisons them in their hell. Spirituality is merely a process of seeing things differently. And that is an active decision, born of desire, coupled with the little willingness called allowance to recognize that each moment is like a jewel presented on a golden plate to you, the offspring of creation. You are the one who has the freedom always, and it literally creates or makes your experience. That last paragraph says, well, do we perceive once again that so many in your world seek to find a spirituality that will free them of their experience, never realizing that that very attitude is the thing that chains them, imprisons them in their own hell. And as I read that, I think about how Dale Allen Hoffman is offering this next weekend. He's offering a webinar, pay whatever you want. Pay a few bucks, pay $33, it's what's recommended. But he's offering a webinar on what do the ancient Aramaic words and Yeshua's words say about heaven and hell. And what was, recorded in the Bible, what was recorded in the Bible from the Aramaic, how has it been translated into the English? So if you want to dive a little more deeply into this concept of heaven and hell, go to DaleAllenHoffman.com, Google search him for his website and his webinars this weekend. It's amazing when you do a little work and you uncover that what most people are taught about hell and heaven and hell in their religions today comes from relatively recent human thought pictures and constructions, poetic depictions in Dante's Inferno, and judgments by people that are geared towards bringing fear into the mind of human beings and to manipulate or pressure people into certain behavior patterns based on generating fear. It's got nothing to do with the actuality of our lives and with any of the great spiritual teachings. And here in the Way of Mastery, it says, look, it's your very desire to get out of, away from your day-to-day life experience that creates the hell that imprisons you. It creates the chains that imprisons you in your own hell. And yet you have the freedom in any given moment to bring a little willingness called allowance and recognize that each moment of your life, no matter how you don't want it and it seems to be painful and goes against everything you'd hoped you'd achieved at this point in your life or whatever, and you can bring that willingness to it and recognize that it is like a jewel presented on a plate to you on your pathway home. The text goes on and reads, the final lesson that I had in time, this is Yeshua speaking through the channeling in the Way of Mastery, the final lesson that I had in time concerning allowance was the crucifixion. Now, I know there are many of you that do not want to follow in my footsteps. And rest assured, beloved friends, if you would look well upon your experience, you'd realize you've already tasted much more profound crucifixions many, many times. In fact, for some of you, my crucifixion was a cakewalk by comparison. You are free to crucify yourself no longer by choosing to transform your very experience, by bringing the power of your mind to bear upon it. Desire, allowance. And so what stands between you and the goal that you seek? What stands between you and the goal that you seek is the decision to try to be insane, the decision to try to resist the flow of life in creation itself. You know that you can resist another body since another body occupies another piece of space. In other words, it is not where you are, and so you can resist it. And yet I say unto you, creation itself is already wholly present right where you are. God, light, love, all that is completely, totally present right where you are. How on earth can you resist what is already occupying the space in which you find yourself? You might as well try to shake your own hand right off your body, or shake and jiggle the skin off the body. Good luck with that. All suffering is the resistance of the truth of life, capital R reality. All awakening and healing is the letting go of resistance, the dismantling of judgment and perception that they're calling forgiveness, and moving into allowance, cultivating allowance, noticing the earliest warning signs of tightness and tension and resistance, and moving into allowance. Creation, life, love, God is already here. I am forever a part of life, a part of creation, a part of God's mind. I surrender. Surrender is the fruit of allowance. Surrender is the fruit of the process of forgiveness, of dismantling judgments and perceptions. Surrender is the same as the atonement, the recognition that all is one. So for now, simply focus on allowance to make sure that you've not left some dark corner in the mind filled with your need to perceive things in a certain way, your need to believe that the world should be other than the way it is, or your forgetfulness that each event that transpires in your experience can be seen as either heaven or hell. As you choose to see only heaven, you will discover the power that has already set you free. The message of this lesson is quite valuable if you will put it into practice. After all, what else could you possibly want to use time for? You've tried everything else and found it lacking. You've not been able to fill it up with enough lovers, enough money, enough cars, enough restaurants. So you might as well fill it up with the transformation of consciousness so that perception begins to be more and more and more aligned with the real world, the actual world, capital R real, the truth of life itself. And if somebody asks you, hey, what do you do with your time? You simply say, I grow Christ. What do you do? So practice well. Begin with the statements given to you at the beginning of this lesson. Again, those statements, 9 statements, the recommendation is write each one of them on the top of a blank sheet of 8.5 by 11 paper. 9 different statements, 9 different pieces of paper. The statements are, it is not possible for you to be without love. It is not possible for you to be alone. It is not possible for you to taste death. It is not possible for you to taste genuine loss. It is not possible for you to suffer the dream of separation. It is not possible for you to be apart from your Creator. It is not possible for you to fail. It is not possible for you to harm anyone or anything. It is not possible for you to be guilty of sin. Write those down at the top of a sheet of paper and one week at a time, take one sheet of paper, pull it out as often as you're inclined to do during that week, once or twice or five times a day, and read it and see what stirs up in you that wants to argue against it. And write that down on the sheet of paper. Turn this into your Michael Rice's targeted journaling that he calls a mind shifter. Only instead of doing it in a 1 hour or 2 hour setting, do it for 5 or 10 minutes and put it away. Come back to it later in the day if you're so inclined. Come back to it the next day one or more times. Sit with it for 10 or 15 minutes. Use that practice of the exercise and watch what gets stirred up in you. Begin with the statements we gave you at the beginning of this lesson. They are very important for you as a way of triggering the opportunity to observe what might be unlike the truth of life that's lingering in the mind of the emotional field, which is just like the space of glue in which you attach perceptions. It's like pinning the tail on the donkey. Stick that to the wall and keep it forever. So let those thoughts, let those beliefs, let those negative judgments about yourself and the world you live in, let them bubble up so that they might be seen as false and purified from the holy mind. Above all, beloved friends, remember, there are no mistakes. You are free to trust the momentum that seems to be shaping your life. For here, you are the one who has complied with life by inviting the Holy Spirit to take you home. You are the one that has prayed for acceleration. Therefore, also, be the one who accepts that grace is being offered to you, whether you like its form and function or not. Remember, resisting the flow of life is of the ego. Embracing the flow of life, just as it is of Christ. The one that allows all things has already transcended all things. Let this lesson be a month-long journey of exploration. Be you therefore at peace this day. Amen. So we are asked repeatedly to be more and more wide open and honest about what we're carrying around in our consciousness as thoughts and beliefs, judgments and perceptions that are less than love. And the more we actively accept, allow, and embrace those thoughts, releasing our attachment to them, seeing them as simply the flow of energy, the more we do that, the less impact they have on us. The more we create from connection to the flow of life in a loving, energetic pattern, with trust, with allowance, with surrender, with embracing, it's a wide open invitation. It is simple and direct, just like digging a ditch. Not easy, but simple. Engage the practice. Step back and observe, engage the practice again, step back and observe, engage the practice again, etc. I have a number of people that I'm working with and have so strong a pattern of relying on their logic and their thoughts, and their goals, that even though it's causing literal tying them in knots and upset and pain, and they are resistant to even do a simple practice like just cancel a goal. You know, even if you don't want to pull out a 5-step worksheet or a 7-step worksheet, just say, okay, I'm feeling upset in this moment, which means I'm resisting something about the flow of life in this moment. I've judged it as bad or wrong. It shouldn't be this way. I have this tension. I have this upset. I have this emotion. Let me just practice taking a breath or two, holding it once my lungs are comfortably full, resisting the exhale to extend it, you know, 4 to 8 times longer than it took me to inhale, and just identify the goal that I'm holding that's not getting met and just play with it and say, I cancel the goal, and watch what bubbles into my mind. And if it has even a tiny fraction of a percent of a possibility of leading to a beneficial change, why wouldn't I try it? Why wouldn't I try it? Well, there's no good logical reason, and yet what we think is logic has us holding on viciously, tightly, to whatever the pattern is in our thoughts. So understand the simplicity and the power of this practice. Just identify that whenever you have a tightness or a tension in your mind, in your body, what it means in that moment is that you're holding on to a goal that's not getting met, that you don't have the ability or the power to change so that it matches, so the outcome matches your goal. And in that moment, the process of identifying with and pouring your energy into that goal is the dynamic that's creating the pain or the emotion or the sadness or the fear that you're experiencing that you say you don't want. And you might want to play around with what happens if you choose to cancel the goal and ask to be shown. As they pointed out in this lesson, no one can make you do that. You have the ultimate power. You have all power under heaven and earth to choose differently. And if you choose to do differently, no one can stop you. If you refuse to choose differently and you cling to whatever's already there, no one can intervene with that process. You're going to be creating your experience of life. And if you've generated enough fear to keep you doing the thing that is causing the pain or fear or sadness, and generating fear about how it might change and you might not like it if it changes, if you interrupt that pattern, then you'll stay in the pattern that you're creating. And that's okay. It may not be optimal. It may take you longer to get where you say you want to go. And yet it's okay. Because you're the one creating your experience of life. Area code 610, Susan, you're in the air.
Hi, Dr. Kim. Number one, the explanation of the dogs being our unconscious, and then the juxtaposition of their innocence as well as ignorance it's so good to put those two together because you can feel better about ignorance than, I mean, feel better about innocence than ignorance. That was just one thing I really loved hearing. And the second is I have a teeny testimonial, which is attached to an observation, I guess, or a question. My grandson, Charlie, has had terrible anxiety, and he's very open. He's a great kid as far as being willing to talk about it. But he, at one point, he said, I'm so anxious, I can't even, I don't know how I'm going to function. And I said, okay, just sit there. And I taught him how to tap. And I've never done that before. I do use it myself when I'm in complete frozen mode. I said, what's your level of upset? 1 to 10, 10 being the worst. And he said, 10. And I said, okay, just breathe and relax. And I showed him the tapping steps, and I made him repeat the script of, even though I'm massively anxious, I love myself and God loves me unconditionally. And by the time we got through one round of it, he said, oh my God, that's amazing, that helps. Now, the tapping didn't cure anything. It didn't talk about a goal, but it was a great tool just to get yourself into a position where you could then do a wake-up sheet or something. And I've never really thought about that before. You've probably said it a gazillion times. The fact that it's just like the breathing, it's just a physical, mechanical exercise. And he's been using it to get himself to the point where he can look at what he's doing. He's not doing wake-up sheets. I'm hoping he'll do one. My other grandson, Luke, one of the other guys, is eager to do a wake-up sheet, and I thought he might even come on the show. I recommend him, both you and Michael, to do a wake-up sheet with him, and I don't know if he'll show up at the Michael Rice part or not. If that doesn't happen, I may get off the phone if he calls, because he's not only busy with schoolwork, but he's got a job. So for him to take a chunk of time and come by a chunk of time is hard. But he's now open to doing a wake-up sheet. So I just wanted to say hooray for the tools.
Excellent. Well, yeah, you're right about the tapping. It's the way we talk about it, and why I've interviewed Brad Yates twice for the On Your Mind podcast. He has a very similar approach. He stayed very close to the gentleman that created it, the EFT tapping, Gary Craig, and he just says, look, this is about energy, and it's about relaxation, and it's about how much better our mind-body-energy system functions when we come from relaxation than when we come from tightness and tension and judgment. And so what we use it for most often in the group is spilling off the energy so that the angst, the anxiety, the anger, the deep sadness dissipates enough so the logic can come back online and the person can complete the worksheet process.
Great.
So thank you for the call. I realize we're down to our last few seconds. I'll mute you so you can listen to the second hour. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Good conversation. You said that was Brad Yates?
Yeah, Brad Yates.
Okay.
And that's through the On Your Mind podcast, hosted by Journey's Dream.
I put the link in the notes for today.
Excellent. Thank you. Have a wonderful show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. It is Tuesday, June 8, 2024. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue talk. And we would love to hear your comments and questions, because that makes this your show. And we'll give Michael a moment to dial in. And I see Susan's hand is up, so I'm going to go ahead and turn on her microphone. Hello, Miss Susan.
Hello, Miss Jeannie. So was it two arms that were being treated now?
Yeah, my right arm, I think it's just because I've used it and not used my left arm. And so it was being sympathetic, I think, for the left arm. So he went ahead and treated both of them today with the acupuncture. So that was
wow.
That was good. Yeah.
How did it go, and how do you feel now?
My shoulder's a little bit sore, but what it is he puts the electrical wires on some of the acupuncture needles, and so it's putting a lot of energy into the muscle. It's almost like it's been working. So it's a little bit sore right now, but I just put some Arnica cream on it. And so just kind of chilling for the rest of the day. We don't have Aria today, so.
Oh, boy. So no massive baseball games in the yard or soccer or badminton or something like that.
Nope. Just calming, chilled afternoon. So.
Oh, good.
Thank you for asking, though.
You're welcome. Are you guys boiling down there?
It is definitely warm. Today it's supposed to, let's see here what it's supposed to get up to. It's 86 degrees right now. It's supposed to go up to 89, but it's very close. Like, you know, it just feels like it's right on you.
Oh, yeah. Right. Well, let me see what it is here. It's been very hot, too. 89, yeah.
Yeah,
right
about
now,
the same.
89. It's going up to 92 at 4 o'clock, which is quite amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's called for rain the last couple of days, but we haven't gotten it. So Michael got out there and watered everything yesterday. Yeah.
Good. Yeah. We have a garden in back with collard greens, and they just came up, and they were so lush and big, and then I went out this morning and something has eaten them so that the leaves are full of holes. They look like lace. And I don't know whether the entire crop has been attacked. I don't know whether it's a varmint, or a rabbit or something, or whether it's because our Michael here has been watering, and maybe he watered when the sun was coming onto them, and the sun burned them. I don't know which.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, that can happen.
Anyway, we had a talk about that. We've had a little breakthrough with Michael. I got my car back from the refugee we lent it to because he has moved into town and is 9 blocks away from where he works. So I could have the car back. And I said, Michael, I'm getting this car back, and you're going to use it to find yourself jobs so you can raise yourself enough money to buy a van, because that's what he keeps saying he really wants. He doesn't want to live in Section 8 housing, even though he's fragile physically, more so because he's been homeless for so long. I think it took a toll on his body, but... So he's out right now, and he says he's going to go to a place tonight to play an open mic and try to get them interested in what he does. And the stuff that Dr. Tim has been reading about allowing has been extremely helpful, because all of my judgments get defused a lot by just saying, allow Michael to be who he is. Allow him to be who he is. Let's see what happens. We have the time. We're not in a rush. We can do this. And Tim Bingham hits his let's get this thing over with ego state once in a while. And I talk to him about allowing and just allowing. And then he comes down and he deflates and he's better. And so between the two of us, we have these bouts of getting impatient with having some kind of decision made or closure. But it's slower than we would have thought we liked. And it's just been good, though, because the bad feeling, that terrible tightness, when you know you're in error, you know you're judging, and, you know, you're on the other side of the light beam when that happens. It's just, it isn't even like doing a wake-up sheet, or maybe it's an instant wake-up sheet, but
sweet.
It just helps a lot.
Sounds like letting go.
Yep, doing some of that.
Cool.
So,
awesome. Well, hold on to space.
Thanks, and I'm waiting word from Lukey. He's so busy that he hasn't been able to either get on the radio show or do a wake-up sheet with me, but I've got an open afternoon till early evening, and so I'm hoping we'll do it. And if we do it without your help, I'll just give you a report. Anyway, nice to have that to offer him.
Sweet.
And I liked what you did, Michael, by suggesting that video and suggesting he do a wake-up sheet. You made me realize nothing outside of me causes anything, so I should change my language there. But anyway, you jump-started me into realizing that he and his girlfriend, even though it looks as if his girlfriend is in a power person thing that's replicating his relationship with his father, if they both use the tools, they might turn it into a healing crisis rather than a mess. And it would be lovely, since he cares so much, to be able to offer him some hope that there are things he can do before he gives up on that relationship. And I hope that's not a mistake. But
sounds
anyway,
right on track to me.
Good. All right. Okay,
sounds
that's
right on
it.
Track. In fact, there's a little piece that after our conversation yesterday that with some thoughts from the Course in Miracles that I'd like to share and that kind of fit in with this this whole conversation.
Great.
Cool. But before that, I actually have a little story that I came across that I thought was rather cute, and I thought I'd share that. It's a story about a man and his wife and mother-in-law, and they go to the Middle East, and the mother-in-law passes away, and the funeral director, you know, go to the funeral director, and the funeral director turns to me and says, you know, we could actually take care of the funeral and arrangements and bailing, and it would cost you $150. Or if you'd like, we can arrange and you can ship her body back to the United States, and that will cost about $5,000. And the man instantly says, we'll pay the $5,000. And his wife is just so touched, you know, that he would do that. And the funeral director is a little bit, you know, confused by what making that choice is. Well, why would you spend $5,000 when we can, you know, take care of everything for just $150? The guy says, well, you know, he says, there's this story about a man 2,000 years ago that died here, right in this area, and they buried him, and 3 days later, he arose from the dead. And he says, I just can't take such a chance.
I knew where you were going as soon as you said that. Oh, Michael, that's great.
Oh, dear. Just can't take the chance. Anyway, there's a passage from the Course which we've talked about many times before. It's one that hasn't come up in a long time, and our conversation yesterday really tapped into that, and it's about the use of words. And know, that oftentimes we try to use words to fulfill a purpose that they just can't fulfill, and we try to understand truth through the use of words instead of through forgiveness, instead of when the mind comes up with a lie, try to figure it out and try to use our words to do that. And the Course kind of moves the whole conversation in a different direction.
Mm.
And recognizing that the truth, you know, the Course is really clear. The truth cannot be spoken in words. And so there's a passage from the Course that says, a theoretical foundation, such as the text provides, is necessary as a framework to make the exercises in the workbook meaningful. Yet in doing these exercises, it is that will make the goal of the Course possible. It goes on to say the Course is using words that come from what the Course refers to as the world of darkness, which would be the world of perception, and that it uses words in order to proclaim the unreality of the world of darkness and give the opportunity to forgive and remove the roots of false perception. And for me, there have been two really powerful paragraphs from the Course that, and this, of all the time I've spent with the Course, these two paragraphs, and I'm sure you've heard me say this before because I've shared this before on the show more than once, that there are two paragraphs that whenever I read them, you know, over the years of working with the Course, and there was a time period where these two paragraphs, when I read them, would instantly put me into an altered state of mind. Like it was just wild what would happen to my mind. And I don't really recall how long this went on. I mean, it might have been something, I just have the recall of reading these and going into this altered state. And I don't know whether it was 2 weeks or it might have been 2 months or 6 months, but every time I would read it, I'd go into this altered state. And then one day I read it and it was just words on the page. Like that whole thing stopped. Whatever the process was that it inspired really just stopped. And so the passages are, it would be indeed be strange if you were asked to go beyond all symbols of the world a while, words, of course, forgetting them forever, yet we're asked to take a teaching function. And this is really what you're doing in your relationship with your grandson. You have need to use the symbols of the world a while, but be you not deceived by them as well. They, meaning perception, words used in perception, do not stand for anything at all, and in your practicing is this thought that will release you from them. Words become but means by which you can communicate in the way the world can understand, but which you recognize is not the unity where true communication can be found. Thus, what you need are intervals each day in which the learning of the world, that is the constructs of your mind, perception, words, becomes a transitory phase, a prison house from which you go out into the sunlight and forget the darkness. Here you understand the word, the name which the Creator has given you, the one identity which all things share, the one acknowledgement of what is true, and then step back to darkness, not because you think it real, but only to proclaim its unreality in terms which still have meaning in the world that darkness rules. And whenever we recognize that the mind has this construct that's all logical and sensible and must be true, but it's not based on love, that structure is being, generally speaking, stimulated into activity and reinforced by words.
Mm.
And to allow that to collapse, and which, of course, is what the forgiveness process does, and allow the presence of love, the presence of light to come into that space for the dissolution of the pain that seems so real, so necessary, and impossible to live without. To give yourself the space to question the value of that. If it's not based in love, it's valueless. And then to allow the space to simply let it go rather than, I love how Richard Bach in his book Illusion says, he says, argue for your limitations, and sure enough, they're yours. And so the willingness to entertain the fact that anything that the mind offers us that's based in pain, to simply, no matter how real it seems, to recognize that that's just another construct of the mind that needs to be removed, to me is an important thing to make the space for. Rather than struggle to keep it and hold on to it, to allow, you know, here's a place of allowing that energy to be dissolved, to be removed, to be liberated. Somehow that all fit together for me as I was thinking about our process yesterday and where we're heading as in individuals and collectively, and holding the space for Luke in this transforming this turmoil and trauma that he's carried into this relationship that is probably the very energy that has resonated this particular girl into a space and created an attraction, which means they both have this wondrous opportunity to unload what they don't even know is there. Literally, to step in to the space where these unconscious dynamics can surface, but surface in a space of gentleness. And, you know, it sounds like they have enough of a connection and caring to really join in allowing both of them to process through and heal the dynamics that each of them are carrying. So we certainly hold the space for you to be the space for them, and for him, especially, to be willing to move to that next level. I'm so delighted that he has that memory of how much that one worksheet changed his
Isn't
life.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah, that's amazing. He got really excited. Would you like to do a wake-up sheet? It's been a couple of years. And he says, oh, I really like that. He was so enthusiastic.
That's awesome.
It's as if he hasn't done it on his own, but the idea. Also, there is something they say in abusive relationships, they call it a trauma bond. Have you heard that phrase? Yeah,
that would be that'd be what I would call matching bags of garbage.
Okay.
It literally resonates people, literally creates an attractive field that draws people together. And, you know, you look at the culture's idea of sympathy. You know, gee, I have this pain, and I see you have a pain just like it. Let's get together and suffer. I mean, people call that sympathy, like there's something decent or wonderful about it. And, of course, the wondrous aspect of it is if we wake up and realize there's healing to be done and can cooperate and recognize, you know, that it's through those interactions, through those connected places of pain, that when we allow love to enter, it's transformed for both people. You know, back when I first started to teach on relationships and developed the what now is the Healing Through Relationships workshop, that workshop used to be called Healing Your Relationships, because I used to believe that there was such a thing as a diseased relationship. And there is no such thing. Every relationship has that perfect bond, that perfect resonance and attraction that, as I said yesterday, you know, the exact same relationship that will carry you to what the world calls heaven will also drag you right down into hell. It depends what you do with it. And there's the potential. And to have someone outside of that relationship, outside of that bond, that has the awareness and is willing to be the space and hold the space is like, what a gift. You know, would that we all could have had that at every instant of our lives. Someone like you're doing for him, of just being that space and being that mentor, is just so monumental.
Well, I'd like to put him in touch with you, because whatever, like the time I worked with Kim on our Mindshifter group, the one you visited last time, I had done a wake-up sheet with her, and then she called you to either do another one or to go over the same one with you, and your insights took her a lot further. So that's one reason I want to sick Lukey on you, or sick Lukey.
Well,
you on him, or Dr. Tim,
I hope it will open.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure that if we could get him on the show with Dr. Tim and walk through a worksheet, he'd have a result. And then if he were to jump on and do maybe even, again, the identical worksheet with me, because of the difference in energies that we all hold for each other, I'm sure he'd get still a different result. And then he could do the same work. You know, remember what Yesha says, how many damn worksheets do we have to do? He says 77 times 70. So everyone, will produce a different healing result. And the more powerfully that space of love is held, the deeper into processing through the root of that kind of trauma bond, the deeper the processing through it's going to be. So,
yeah,
we certainly hold the space for it.
Right. Great.
It will be delightful.
I know.
Honored and delighted.
Okay.
All right, young lady, want any other thoughts for you today?
No. I'll just be listening. There's going to be a lot of hubbub here in a little while, but I'll try to stay on.
Okay, have a blessed one.
Thanks. You too. You too, Jeannie.
Okay, take care.
Good luck with the arms.
Thank you.
Well, Miss Jeannie, it looks like we've still got lots of time, 40 minutes almost. So is there anybody out there in the phone queue with a hand up, or anything happening in the chat room? Questions from the app? Questions from email?
I do not have any questions we haven't addressed. And you can ask a question in the chat room, and I'm not sure. It says, could you send some of the here over to Manchester? But I'm not sure exactly what she was talking about. So I ask her, so Yinka, if you're listening, what is it that you're needing? We'll see if we can send it over.
So tell us what's happening, Yinka. What support can we be?
Oh, she's saying some of the sunshine.
Okay. I can relate to that. You getting a lot of rain over there?
So Susan and I were talking at the beginning about how it had called for rain for a couple of days, but we hadn't gotten any, and it was up high 80s, low 90s, and super hot, so she was talking about sending her some sunshine. So we'll blow some over that way. So if there's no questions, I guess we go back to enlightenment. So if you, a hand
let's
just went up.
Let's do it. Well, then let's say hello.
765. It's Sunny. Hi. Welcome.
Hey. All righty.
Welcome in, lady. How are you?
I'm doing great, actually doing really, really well. I do see some folks are, I have some questions that come to me, and I'm like, okay, so if any of them are listening to maybe from your perspective do a more qualified job of answering them, Michael, in presenting
go for it.
The work.
What questions have you got?
Presenting the work. Well, in presenting the work to a larger group of people, I had a woman ask me, so if somebody is coming at you and abusing you, do you not have a right to defend yourself? And I was only able to respond with, you know, tonal quality of your voice to assert, make your declaration of I don't deserve this and whatever, or just be as peaceful within yourself. But if you feel it, any of their words stick with you, then that's something within you to be processed out either through a worksheet or the best way you know how, because these folks, never having personally experienced you, I don't have an expectation that they're going to really fully get it, just, you know, releasing audios and doing the best I can with the material, which you've listened to a good bit of that. But rather not a person, how a person might, you know, what is it, you know, at least represent yourself, and that I'm not going to be folly, you know, fall folly to your parade of whatever and make your point and necessarily defend themselves, if that's the proper word. But when someone's coming at them, and I think that would probably be part of your work that you do, especially when people are in intensive at Heartland, the reentry program, so to speak, while a person's doing their work,
right,
there's going to be somebody there trying to pull you down. And then they meet with those,
okay,
resistances to your changes, that kind of thing. If you could speak to that, I'm sure,
okay,
that
I can. I can,
yes,
do that.
Thank you.
And we'll, yes, we'll approach it from several different places, several different levels, because there are different perspectives on a circumstance like that. One place I think to look to recognize is if someone's coming at you, i.e. if there is physical danger, then anyone and everyone has the right to get out of Dodge, step aside. You know, it's time to move into a space of safety. I think that's it. Number one, there's never any reason to stand there and take abuse. And then to look on the level of creatorship, recognizing that, and for me, one of the greatest atrocities that has been done to us as human beings and that we've bought into is that we've had hidden from us the fact that we are by nature creators. And as creators, what comes to us, we have participated in, we have created it. Now, many people interpret that as, oh, you mean I'm to blame? I'm the guilty party? I'm the one who's at fault here? It's like, no, you'll notice that the worksheet process is a no-fault process. It's what that's saying is just to recognize that I'm a participant and in everything that happens in my life, and everything that comes to me, there's a part of me involved. But if I deny and hide that part from myself, while I am attracting it, I'm standing there saying, but I have nothing to do with this. And so recognizing that I have a part and there's work for me to do, you know, there's an interesting passage very early in the Old Testament in the book of Job. And for me, it's one of the first places in the history of the world that I know of that there's an acknowledgement or a rudimentary understanding developing of what's called quantum physics, which means participation to me. And here's this guy, Job, who's this wondrous, upright, you know, everybody thinks Job is great, including the creator. And then all of a sudden, he starts to lose everything. Like, everything's taken from him. And he's trying to understand what has gone on. And if you read it, it's kind of interesting. It's a fairly long book. And if you read it, shortly after all these losses, he says to himself, like, insight, that which I feared most has come upon me. That which I dreaded has happened to me. And what I hear there is Job is saying, ah, this is a participatory world. There's a part of me that set this up. And it's interesting because he says that, but he doesn't get it himself, even though he says it. And that's kind of part of the healing process Many times people will have an insight like that, but there's so much confusion and so much noise in the world, and that's what happens to Job. He rides right over that, and, you know, he has friends that come to visit, and they're all sympathizing with him, and they're all trying to figure out what happened and what did he do wrong and what did, where, you know, the when, where, why, how of it all. And then finally, just before Job is restored, he makes the declaration that I'm going to let go of what I've been doing to myself. And when he does that, all of a sudden, everything that's been taken from him is restored to him. And that restoration doesn't happen via defense, because energetically in the quantum field, in this world of actual energy, the actuality of the world, the subtle energetic patterns that we put into the world create results. You know, there's a great line in the Course in Miracles that says, in my defenselessness, my power and safety lie. Recognizing that the minute that I put up a defense, I just set into the quantum field the very energy that will invite attack. And so, well, number one, I make sure I'm safe if there's physical threat. The next step is to start to look at, and this is, to me, the whole of the reality management forgiveness process, is that when I engage in forgiveness in a given circumstance and I identify the goal that's involved in producing this result and I cancel it, then I get to, by canceling that goal, collapse the perceptual output of my mind that holds the belief of, look, I'm an innocent victim being attacked, the problem's out there, and boy, I have to do something about what's going on out there. And by collapsing that false story, you know, what I had shared a few minutes ago with Susan about, you know, the world of darkness, the world of perception, that by collapsing that false story, I get to uncover the part of me, I get to start to be able to see the part of me and own the part of me that sets up this circumstance. And when I bring that part of me to the presence of love, number one, that part of me, which is a disease energy, was stored somewhere in my tissue structure and therefore is a, what on a level where we think of physical, is a physical disease. When I can embrace that energy in love, literally that which load which has been somewhere in my physiology, creating a disease in my tissue structure, is removed and physiological healing occurs. And two, as I own that and dissolve that, literally the request, a la, you know, Job's insight, that which I feared most has come upon me, I remove that subtle energetic request from the world that the world is designed to fulfill for me. And when I remove it, I mean, literally, if someone does a worksheet in the middle of a conflict, I mean, you know, someone maybe who's really done some practice with it and done a worksheet right in the middle of the conflict and dissolves the energy with which they're participating in this, oftentimes the person who's playing the role of the attacker will stop mid-sentence and the attack will just disappear. Like the energy just went out of the attack and the situation changes like in an instant. And so on each level where one does their work, touching into the unconscious or the hidden part of my mind, that is locked somewhere in what I call my body, creating disease energies. I get to remove the disease energy, and I get to remove the influence that brought this about in the first place. So Job realized that what created all of that for him, that which I feared most has come upon me. You know, if you read the whole book, I mean, this guy's a pretty cool dude, but he has one problem. And I've never seen anybody who's looked at the book of Job and gone, oh, that's what was
Michael,
happening.
Your voice just disappeared.
Did your mic cut out, Michael?
Not that I know of. Am I still there? Can you hear me? Hello? Jeannie?
I cannot hear you, Sonny. If you can hear him, say so.
Okay. Try again. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
You can hear me now? Okay. Must have been something
yes,
in my connection. Okay. So Job, what he ends up saying is, I'm going to take back my words. And his words were, if you read through, you can see that, you know, he's this described as this good and upright man, but there's something that terrorizes him. And that is that his children won't be as good as he is. And he has a daily ritual of focusing on his fear about his children and then, you know, trying to make up for it. And it's his fear of loss over his children that creates all of his loss. And then in the end result, when he finally wakes up, he takes back his words and he's restored. And it's a subtle lesson, but when I realize that I am a creator and every energy that I hold creates results both in my physiology, in my mind, in my emotions, and in my world, if I see something rising to attack me and I apply forgiveness, I can remove that energy in an instant. Does that help to get where you want to go with your question? Am I on track with what you're looking for?
Well, it was not originally my question, so hopefully the person having access to the recording will get what they needed out of that. And I think it was more about, are we just supposed to be sweetness all the time, even-minded all the time, or not assert to address a person and, you know, that is definitely got something going on with you, though you may not understand where they're coming from and they're just coming at you. You know, if the value of, if their words have any value to you or it hurts or you feel it adversely, that is in fact something to do a worksheet on. And that it is okay for us to, maybe when somebody is definitely kind of taking advantage of one's patience and not, you know, regarding your request or your intention for exactly that, and you use a different tone of voice with them and explain, this is where, you know, so to speak, I draw the line. These are my limitations. Or do you realize that that was not kind, that if a person should be making those observations and speaking that forth to represent themselves, I think. That is it okay to communicate even assertively your response to someone, you know? I mean, how, otherwise we would be monotone. We'd be walking around like robots, but it's not to be malicious or violent in any way. But does a person have a right to assert or represent themselves? I guess was maybe most of the question there.
Well, my take on that, a different slant, would be that the first order of business for a human being, especially in our world as it's operating today, is to maintain our human lives. And if our own minds obliterate our human lives, and when I hear you use the word assert, and then there were some other words that I would interpret as being based in hostility or fear, that if I allow hostility or fear to arise in me to the point where I lose consciousness of myself as the presence of love, then I have a problem. If I can maintain my human life, do I need, or in the process of maintaining myself as the presence of love, do I need to lay down and let somebody stomp on me? Absolutely not. But if I give up myself as the presence of love, if I give up my human life to respond to that, then I have a problem. So I want to achieve the goal of maintaining myself as a human being. You look at so many people and they've given themselves over to, i.e., in order to protect themselves, they've given themselves over to so much rage and so much attack and so much defense that the awareness of themselves as love is gone. They've literally lost their human lives in the process of defending themselves. So for me, the first order of business is, can I maintain the presence of love in me in this response? And I can respond very strongly and very clearly, let's say in that circumstance of attack, I can respond very clearly and very powerfully as the presence of love. If I flip over into some form of hostility or fear, then I have work to do. Because that hostility or fear that's moving in me means that I've lost the most precious thing I have, and that is my human life. And when people go, well, I don't even know what that looks like, which for many people, you know, when over the years, I can't count how many people said, Michael, you're talking about this thing called love. I don't even know what you're talking about. Like, they've so given that up that they have no experience or no brain cells for what that even means. And that's where, if you remember when we opened the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop, we all always start with a question, and that is, have you ever held a newborn? Go back to the moment where you held that newborn and tap into the essence of that newborn. And then we ask people to describe, if you remember being in a live Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop, we ask people to describe in one word what the essence of that newborn would be. And we usually get words like sweetness, clarity, beauty, love, sweet presence. They're the kinds of words we get describing the newborn. And, you know, if you remember correctly, I put that list up on the left side of the board. And at the top of it, write the word being. So here are the words that describe what our human life is. And my number one obligation is, to me, is to maintain my human life. If I give that up for some form of hostility or fear, then I've allowed a dis-ease energy to overtake my physiology, and that's what's going to show up in my physiology as my diseases. And you remember when I do the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop, on the right side of the board, I'll ask another question, or Jeannie will if she's doing the opening, and that is, how many have ever done something they regret? And we ask people to tell us what they were feeling when they did what today they regretted. And 100% of the time, having asked this question of tens of thousands of people, 100% of the time, the answer is always some variation on the theme of hostility or fear. So if you remember, you're sitting in front of a 4x8 whiteboard. On one side are all these words that describe love, describe human life. And on the right side are all of the words that describe things like rage and hate and fear and terror and trauma and such. And so if you remember, then I'll oftentimes point to one side. You know, we have a choice. Where do we live? If we come from a bloodline, generational patterns with nothing but hostility and fear, then most of that person's so-called life is on the right side of the board. they're in that hostility or fear-based state and thinking they're protecting themselves and, you know, all of that. They're the people I would offer that Yeshua said, they're the dead who bury the dead and the blind who lead the blind. To reclaim the presence of love in a circumstance of attack happening is a giant piece of work. To stay connected to being is, to me, it's the whole bottom line of the work. To maintain, to build awareness of, and to come from this space where I understand who I am as love, and I can speak with great clarity and great power from love saying, excuse me, that's a line that you're not crossing. When I cross over into hostility or fear, I'm now in my own disease state. And, you know, if I'm in a situation and the energy's hot, I might go into that disease state. And as soon as I'm out of that hot energy, that hot situation, I'm digging out the pen and the paper and I'm going to work and cleaning that part of my own mind that this person has just given me the gift of acquainting me with, with their attack. And it's a process.
Yes, it is. Thank you, Michael. The only other method. Go ahead, please.
No, I just say, I'm kind of grinning with you. Yeah, it is. It's a process.
Yes, and as I texted you Saturday, you and I have had such processes between each other in the past, for myself anyway. And the regulatory speech and all of that kind of thing was kind of stuck with me for a good long time. And yes, your process, this process is incredibly beautiful. The only other issue that I have technologically is I can retrieve the radio shows from the website, put them in that particular social media, but then to play them back in the group, we've had several other people attempt it when I forward it to them. And whatever that looks like, we're not able to replay them outwardly because that June 11th, I believe it was by the time we got through some of the callers and the timeline I have to function in, was that like the 119, 123 timestamp where you were doing what you do so eloquently and the message was incredibly beautiful. And it was just right on top of everything for us. And I attempted to share it and other people tried in there and we just can't get past the technology. So that's just maybe for your knowing. Because your messages are amazing.
Yeah, two thoughts. If somebody wants to download that particular show, if they go to our website, whyagain.org, there's a microphone in the middle of the page. If they click on the microphone and just follow the links, it'll drill right down and they can download the actual MP3 of that show and play it. Or they can either download it and, you know, save it to their phone or their computer or whatever, or they can listen to it right from that link. And one of the things that Jeannie's been doing is converting the radio shows that we've been doing recently to MP4s, which are video tracks, and they're on our YouTube channel. So the most recent shows, actually the last, I think, 2.5 or so months, are all there as video files on YouTube. Now, they've just got a picture there. They aren't a whole video. But the audio track plays on YouTube on those dates. So Jeannie's been doing that the last couple of months. So every one of those shows, if it's within the time frame of the last couple of months, then that show is on YouTube if you look for the date. And then there are actually two people who've been assisting us. They've gone back and taken, and I think most all of our special archived shows, which are shows where we've done worksheets and such with people, they've converted those. And huge, huge thank you to both folks who are working on that. And so a lot of shows now have been uploaded from the first year, like back in 2011, many of those shows are available on our YouTube channel, as well as all of the special archived shows, the ones that we, you know, personally consider the best shows, the most important shows that we've done. And so they're also available on YouTube. So that might be another place to just check and see if you can find the date that, that particular date, and see if you can get the file to play all right.
Yes, we have noted those. And thank you to you and Jeannie and that whole team that's making that possible, because we have shared a good amount of those particular shows already. And fabulous. It's just, you know, that one
Sweet.
In particular, and maybe even today, that does help people to understand, you know, that ability to, you haven't failed in your worksheet process or failed as a beautiful human if you're in that particular circumstance to address such an issue for themselves and be able to have that material to communicate outwardly in a group setting like that.
Right.
I appreciate you very much, Michael.
Cool. What date was it, the one in particular you were thinking of?
June 11th, and then today might be nice. Would be very nice, actually.
Jeannie, your mute button's pushed. Unmute. There you are. We got you now.
So June the 11th is listed as enlightenment number 91 in YouTube. Because we've been doing the enlightenment study, and so I was listing them by number.
Okay.
And so it will be on YouTube, enlightenment number 91.
Thank you so
much. And I'll put
much.
The link for it in today's notes as well.
All righty then. Thank you so much.
Cool. Awesome. Well, any other thoughts for you, young lady?
Other than, and looking at the clock, there is an instance in that group where I'm describing how people are triggered when someone, even if they are of like an Asperger's or high autism lifestyle, what have you, does a lot of communicating in vulgarities. And maybe the energy or the perception behind those folks that do not have an expanded, or maybe do have an expanded vocabulary, and how to coexist with people like that, because that only happens for them once in a while. And beyond that, they're an incredibly beautiful person to fully appreciate them, to where you maybe find yourself excusing or making every effort to coexist with someone who has those types of behavioral patterns, or just behavioral patterns in general.
Give me a little more of where you're heading with that. I don't quite get.
He's a beautiful person that will, you know, be a very, very high vibration, communicating, offering a great deal. But it becomes, once they get into a sense of humor, they tend to lose track of where they're going, and then they slip into multitudes of F-bombs and beyond. And but yet, when the person is able to retrieve themselves later, you don't find that same conduct in them. And
right.
It is kind of doing damage control there, because it's not good, and it's not necessarily, I say it's not good, it's not readily socially acceptable.
And I'm not sure what your question is there, or is that a question?
Well, maybe what is your take on people who do engage in, I mean, their words. And then if they're projected at people or what have you, where does that maybe come from? Where is that person maybe in their pain or their process of why they would choose to use vulgarity on the regular?
Okay. Good point. So first of all, I just sent you a link to the video track of Enlightenment number 91, the one you were asking about. I just texted it to you. So you can check that out and see if that works. So remember
you.
The codependency, interdependence, intense work, where we define what we call a power person. And our definition of a power person is three things that make for a power person dynamic being instilled in a person's mind. One, it's usually between a parent and a child, though not always. And the parent has more power over the child than the child has. Two, the parent is not functioning as a human being. That is, they're not functioning out of love. And three, the child perceives it, the circumstance, as survival. When those three things happen, and this is usually with quite young children, although, again, I've seen it happen with adults, too, outside of a parental relationship, but the most common one is in the parental relationship. When those three things occur, the child, when you think in terms of the actuality of the fact that we are energy beings, we're not physical beings, the child's energy field opens wide. They become like a sponge and just absorb every energy in the environment, just literally, just suck it all in. And that becomes a power person dynamic in that person's life. And for the rest of their lives, and my take is that this single principle literally is running the world. Because for that person, for the rest of their lives, when that power person dynamic is resonated into activity, their behavior is going to be keyed into their power person. And it's not a choice that they make. It's not that they have a choice about that. The person who goes along in the conversation, civil and decent, and all of a sudden up come all the F-bombs and all the hostility and such. What has happened is that the person who behaves like that is there's a power person dynamic locked in their minds. And as I say, there are only three behaviors possible for that person, literally, for the rest of their lives, until that dynamic is uncovered and cleaned up, it's going to run their lives. And the thing that determines what their behavior is going to do is not their choices, but rather the level of stress they're under. And you'll notice, you know, it sounds like you've observed a person or maybe more than one person flipping into this type of behavior. And just take a look, and here's what has happened. When there's little or no stress in somebody's life, they'll do whatever they did to get along with their power person. When stress starts to build, they'll do whatever they did to resist and survive with their power person. And when they become ultra-stressed, they'll do what their power person did to them that they hated the most. And so that looks like, you know, this person's Mr. or Ms. Nice Guy. And, you know, you meet them and you go, what a nice guy, what a nice gal. And, you know, everything's cool. But then a goal is in that person's mind that whoever they hold that goal for, themselves or someone else, that goal is not being achieved and their stress starts to build. And that's when they'll move from Mr. or Ms. Nice Guy to maybe Mr. or Ms. Snarky. All of a sudden, the person who, you know, you've known them for years, they've always been wonderful, but all of a sudden they flip into this snarky place. That's the second level of stress. And again, it doesn't have anything to do with choice. It's an automatic decision system in the mind. The third level is when they become ultra-stressed. What happens is, the very behavior that their power person did to them that they hated the most is what they'll kick into and do. They'll do what their power person did to them that they hated the most to whoever's in the way. And so that would be turning into the F-bomb attack person. And they're just replicating the power person behavior. And again, it isn't that they choose to do that. There's no choice about it. In fact, many people who have observed that in themselves will say, well, once they catch themselves doing it, well, I'm never going to do that again. And they mean it. They don't want to do that. But not knowing how to manage their stress, and that's one of the reasons for the forgiveness process, because it keeps stress at lower levels. And not knowing how to manage the stress, when the stress hits that ultra-stress place, the automatic decision system just kicks in, and whatever the behavior was that the power person did to them that enabled the power person to be the winner, perceived the winner in the situation, when they become ultra-stressed, unconsciously they look into, what did my power person do to win over me? Oh, that's what they did, F-bombs and attack. Okay, well, now I'm in enough stress, I need to win, and so now I'll do what my power person did to me that I hated the most, which they perceive as a way of winning. So I'd offer that's the dynamic that runs the show, and that's the codependence to interdependence workshop. And there is a codependence to interdependence worksheet on the website that you might want to look at. And under the DVDs or the streaming, there is a video that can be purchased of either a DVD or a streaming DVD that lays that whole workshop out and the worksheet. So you might find that helpful. And beyond that, we're past our time, so I'm just going to say thank you, everybody, for joining us. Create the best year yet of your eternal life. Thank you for those questions, young lady, and we hold the space. Thanks, everybody. Blessings. Bye-bye.